Brendan O'Connor on RTE Radio 1 with Allcare Pharmacy. Need expert advice on your family's health? Speak to us today at Allcare Pharmacy, Ireland's largest community pharmacy network.
Poet Rita Ann Higgins, good afternoon to you in the Galway studio.
Hi, Brendan. How are you?
And Rita Ann, people will not be used to hearing you on this side of the Angelus, and usually we don't have time to chat and you just deliver the poem and get out of there. Yeah. But today we've a bit more time with you, and you've agreed to pick out five songs that have meant something to you throughout your life. So will we get straight down to it? Tell us about your first choice, Fats Domino.
The Fats Domino, Blueberry Hill. I come from a very religious background, as you probably would know from my poems, Obs. And my mother was extremely religious, but this song always reminds me of her. Now, it would be the Clancy Brothers more would remind me of my father, but this particular song, it seemed to be on in the house a lot. And I think there was an LP. I definitely heard it an awful lot. It always, always, always reminds me of my mother. And it reminds me of Ballybrit when I was very young, where I grew up until I was 11.
And did it bring out a different side of her than the Clancy's?
Well, it's just that the reason it kind of resonates with me is because it's your mammy, it's your mother, it's mammy. You don't associate mammy with I found my trill in Blueberry. You know that kind of way? You know how judgmental we are as children?
Oh yeah, mammies aren't supposed to be racy or...
No, mammies, after having 12 kids, one died, are definitely not supposed to like Fats Domino. But then you see, that's the brilliance of music, that all the borders go with it, like they're knocked down.
So there was a woman in there under Mammy, and this is what she liked to listen to sometimes. This is Blueberry Hill by Fats Domino.
I found my thrill
Hill by Fats Domino. That's Rita Ann Higgins' first music choice today. You see, I can hear why you were scandalised by your mother listening to this. There's a kind of a dangerous languorousness to that music, isn't there, Rita Ann?
There is a kind of a falling back feeling, you know, like lying on a couch, which would never happen, which my mother would never have done with all those little creatures around the house, you know.
Yeah. So is that, are we talking the 60s when you would have been listening to that with your mother at home?
That's right.
And paint us a picture of life in the house then.
Well, it was, you know, if you ever went to the Galway races, there's 12 cottages there just at the far entrance where the cars have to go. And that's where we lived in number 11, Ballybrit. And it was just a magical place. You just went, we always went to the races. And it reminds me, when I think of it, of Dylan Thomas under Milkwood. Because, you know, you can't forget the characters and the characters. My mother's friends were lovely. All the mammies were lovely. And one mammy would knit your jumpers and somebody else would, you know, someone brought the milk. Somebody, I think we had our own eggs. And you kind of went in and out of the neighbours' houses and you gave skins to Mrs. up the road for the chickens. And you walked in and out of people's houses and it was just a magical time. And a lot of the daddies kind of like to take a drink, you know, one or two of the daddies like to take a drink. But, you know, that was part of growing up in the country and you knew darkness because there was no streetlights. And that darkness brought, you know, scary stories. It just helped the imagination. But it was wonderful too, because there was a neighbour who used to whistle. And I would certainly wait to hear him whistling to going in home, you know, and I would kind of fall asleep then. I'd say, God, he's in now. He's home safe, thank God.
And all was well with the world.
And me only six.
they train him in early in Ireland to be lying awake waiting for men to come back from the pub. Listen, your next track is from the first ever record that you owned, I think, is it?
I won it. The next one is from Herb Alpert and the Tijuana Brass. I won it at a raffle. I love the raffle. You know, like to this day, I love buying a ticket for a raffle. And you can't do it as much anymore. But it seems like there was something going on at school and I must have bought a ticket because this was my prize, Herb Alpert and the Tijuana Brass.
And how old were you?
This now was... in the Moninagisha. So I would have been, I spent part of a year there as my secondary education. So because I didn't go any, I did a year in the Mersey and I did part of a year in the Tech. So I suppose I would have been 12 at this stage. Would I? What age would you be when you go to 12 or 13?
12 or 13, yeah. Right, yeah. And what did you make of Herb Alpert?
Well, I just, it was the idea of winning it.
Yeah.
And going home and then having it played. I don't think anybody was as impressed by it as I was. Yeah.
Okay.
You know.
Here we go. This is Spanish Flea by Herb Alpert and the Tijuana Brass. It's hard not to feel jaunty listening to that now.
I'm bouncing around the studio here.
He's a genre unto himself, really, isn't he? But like, he conjures up a world that's a million miles away from number 11 Ballybrit too, doesn't he?
He sure does, but he sure is lively.
Yeah, yeah. So listen, now money was tight, I know. So you would have gone out to work in your early teens, kind of, wouldn't you?
Oh, yeah. I didn't finish that first year in the Tech and I went and did all, you know, I worked in a lot of the factories. The factories were down. I like down the road. The factories were down the road.
Yeah.
And everything was convenient. So I worked in the shirt factory, the buckle factory, the nut and washers factory, and SBS. And I wrote poems about most of them, and the computer factory. And in the computer factory that was digital, they gave us big mass of turkeys for Christmas. But the turkey wouldn't fit in our oven. We had to get a hatchet to it, I swear. You'd think, no, this is a joke, Brendan. We used to have to get a hatchet to the turkey on Christmas Day to chop it up to cook it in the oven. It was that big. But they had no unions. Do you get me?
Oh, yeah.
That's the trick. We'll give you a big turkey and you'll never think of the union.
Yeah. And isn't it funny that that's what you remember from your years working in the factories? is their over generosity with the turkeys? Was there a good old scene, though? Like, I suppose we have this kind of romantic idea of factory girls working together and great camaraderie and all that.
Oh, I loved it. And like the poems would reflect that too. And I didn't bring any of them ones, so don't ask me about them. But no, it did. There was always jiving. You'd be jiving at the break. We all smoked. Like, you know, you had to smoke because everybody smoked. And in the shirt factory, I was a cutter, which was kind of like a big deal, if you think of it. Now, I never cut a straight line.
Yeah,
so
a fashion designer, we call that these days.
Yeah, but I couldn't do the straight line. So I didn't last too long cutting, but it was absolutely amazing fun. But you know, they all left, and I think I moved on then to selling encyclopedias after that.
There's about three films here so far. Like, there's one in number 11, there's another in the factories, and now you're out door to door selling encyclopedias.
Yeah, and I'm afraid of dogs. Like, I don't know how I did this job at all, because the dogs used to chase me. I would run, they would bark, I would have anxiety. But I'd go back, and it was Collier's Encyclopedias. So I was so good at it that I moved to Letterkenny and I stayed in the Ballyrain Hotel, Maria. But no, I really did. Like, yeah. I stayed in the Ballyrain Hotel before I got accommodation. I rented somewhere. But when I was in the Ballyrain Hotel, I used to play something that Christy and myself love, Mark Boland. And
right.
That's hot love. I used to play that. I was going with Christy at the time when I went to Letterkenny, but we weren't married because I was 17 about. So I married him, I think, when I was nearly 18. But I was 17 this time,
nearly
16
18.
Or 17. Yeah, yeah. I married him in 73, Christmas 73. And we were married 50 years at Christmas.
Right, so you got married very young, yeah?
But
that's
what you. No, not really. I like the local. I like the factories local and the husband near. And I just like.
But Redan, what about that whole world of men that was out there that you never tried out at all, no?
Well, that's what you think.
Okay. Come here, before we play Mark Boland. Tell me about the encyclopedia. So people would, because we all had them at home. I remember, like at home in my house now, it was World Book and Childcraft. And would it be that people would kind of get a subscription and you'd get them by the month kind of thing? You'd get a new volume, or did they buy them all together and then pay for them on the Never Never?
Some people paid a cheque like straight away to the, I don't know that they paid it to you at, in the house, but it was mostly people, actually it was people who had nothing that bought them. Would you believe that?
Yeah.
People wanted to do better for their kids and, you know, it was, and it was an American set, Collier's.
Mm.
But, you know, if you sold, we got awful big money. Because I had a car very early.
Really?
You know, we got awful big money. It was commission only. It was no unions, of course.
Yeah.
The bane of my life. And then it just, you didn't have a conscience, though. I didn't have a conscience at that time. And then when I look back on it, I think it was probably wrong. Sometimes pushing, you know, pushing it.
Yeah, yeah. But you're lucky you were young. Yeah.
Yeah, I was young. And I went to Letterkenny then and... I
love that their promotion was to Letterkenny.
That
was the
area.
Dream. If I can do well enough, I can get to Letterkenny.
I know. I was an area manager in Letterkenny.
Were you?
Right. I was. That's a hoot.
Yeah. So all of them around selling poor people encyclopedias. You were the dark Svengali running it all. Okay.
Oh God, forgive me.
We'll move away from these naughty issues of conscience. And here is your third choice. So this is Mark Bolan and T-Rex and Hot Love.
Well, she's faster than most and she lives on the coast. Uh-huh. Well, she's faster than most and she lives on the coast. Uh-huh. Two-penny prince and I give her hot love. Take that on me, mama.
That's Mark Bolan and T-Rex, Hot Love, and that is the poet Rita Ann Higgins' third choice today. So I have all kinds of pictures in my head now of you and Christy back then, that this was your song. So was he a bit of a rocker, a bit of a glam rocker?
Well, we were both kind of like that, but he had the tattoos and the flowers. Stitched onto his jeans and the long hair. He was very definitely hippie okay. type, you know.
Yeah.
And still kind of is a bit, you know. He was saying today, now he might get a little bit of the hair cut. Should we be saying this every week, the two of us? We have to get a haircut and we never do it.
These are the things you talk about when you're 50 years married.
Will
I get the haircut, Christy? I don't know. Maybe you should, yeah. Yeah. It's like your man whistling, these kind of reliable things in life.
I know, yeah. But they're safe, you see.
It is a great love story, though, isn't it?
I suppose it is. He's a good person. I probably don't deserve him. You know, he's really good. He's kind and I don't know what he makes of me, but he hangs in there.
Are you kind to him or are you tough?
I'm pretty kind to him, like, you know, most of the time.
Okay, yeah, and he's not going to argue, right?
No, no, he's a nice person, you know what I mean? He's decent and he's kind and he loves me. That's the thing, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. Do you have a laugh?
Oh, I said to him, the day you stop making me laugh, you're out that door.
Yeah, yeah, that's the only thing that can keep you going, isn't it?
Well, it's great, you know, it helps.
You don't write kind of love poems about Christy at all, really, do you?
I don't actually, you know, it's a weird one. Probably because I don't have to. Or, I don't know, it doesn't work like that for me. I don't write an awful lot about daughters either or grandsons. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I have. I just, that part of it might be sacred. I don't know why that happens. You can never tell when a poem is what it's going to be about or, you know.
But I suppose, like, kind of roughly speaking, you're a political poet. It's kind of a poet about society, are you?
Well, I suppose with a small p, social with a small p and political with a small p, but it'd be like when you come from 11 Ballybrit, that was the background, wonderful background, you know, walking on hot tar, picking blackberries, but you didn't, that was the extent of the wealth, unless you had love in the family, and we were very lucky. My mother was extraordinary, and my father was contrary enough, but he was all right. Having all them kids around the place would make anybody cranky, like.
Yeah.
But we didn't have anything, but nobody had anything. But we were very happy. It was a lovely childhood, I have to say. I loved it out there. It was different than moving into Merrillview. Flush toilets, oh my God, get over that one.
Really, yeah?
That was very hard. And indoors, it seemed to me to be a filthy notion. Toilets indoors, for God's sake.
And when did you start writing poetry? Because you came late to kind of reading and that kind of thing, didn't you?
I did, yeah. No, I had TB in 77. Heather was born in September 1977, and I was in the sanatorium that Christmas, and I couldn't see her, and Christy used to bring her up and show her in the window. So I don't want to dwell too much on that now, because that's too sad.
Okay, yeah, yeah. God, it seems like something weeping from another era, though, the sanatorium.
Yeah, no, 1977, the sanatorium in Merrion Park was chock-a-block. It was full. And everybody used to watch Talca Row, and the priest was always coming there, giving us communion and so on. And it was full. Everybody, a lot of people had TB in 1977, believe me.
How long were you there?
I wasn't there that long, a few months, really. People were there for 2 years.
But you kind of started reading then?
I started reading then, and I started with Wuthering Heights and Animal Farm.
All right, Animal Farm. You started with quality there, yeah.
I did,
you went straight in at the top, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then I think your next song is kind of relates to when you were starting out with the poetry then, does it?
That's right. Yeah, that's right. So that was about... So then I was starting to write and going to workshops and having works published, and then I was about to have a book out in 1986. But in 1985, there was this voice in Galway, and I kind of really loved it. It was kind of scratchy. It was Mary Coughlan. And, you know, her singing... I kind of felt very comfortable in my writing when I heard her singing, and I thought there's a chutzpah there between us. And she's from Shantaline, from Merrillview. I loved her first album, loved lots of her albums, and I loved particularly Double Cross, and it was written by Fintan Coughlan, and I knew Fintan as well, you know, small town. And but I thought it was I thought her voice was extraordinary, and I just thought, this is the revolution I waited for.
Okay, so you fell part of something, like.
I did, really. Yeah, I just loved her voice, and I thought she's doing something really, really positive for us, because it's kind of like giving us permission to do and say things as well, you know?
Brilliant. Okay, here's Double Cross by Mary Coughlan.
Wake up in the morning, I get out of bed and drag my makeup on. I walk out on the street, my every exit's covered.
That's Double Cross by Mary Coughlan, and that is the poet Rita Ann Higgins' fourth choice today. Rita-Ann, your final piece of music is connected with your late brother, Bartley. Just before we get to that, you don't mind me asking you, you're estranged from your siblings, aren't you?
Oh, yes, yes, I am estranged from my siblings, yeah, since Hurting God in 2010. But I did kind of have a few words with, you know, some did chat to me at one funeral. I think it was my sister's funeral. But I haven't any contact with any of them. None of them came to the town hall event, but that's okay. They don't, you know, they don't have to come to my events. You know, there was a special night for me there, and a couple of cousins came in from, cousins on my mother's side from Mary were there, and I was very happy with that, you know.
Yeah. It's hard though, is it?
It gets easier. You know, it's just that if you think you're not liked by your own.
Yeah.
That can be kind of tough, and you don't, you know. But the story behind the choice was that I was in Belgium with an arts officer from Dunleary. Now, her second name was Slattery, I think. I can't think of her first name, but she was really, really nice. And we were talking about music in a taxi in Belgium. And she said, I'll send you this LP when we get home. And she did. And I was walking in the race course one day. I walk in the race course a lot because there's no dogs allowed there. And it's not 2 million miles from where I live now with Christy. And I was walking around the race course and this came into my head, this song, the first song on this LP. And I started thinking about my brother. And I knew he was deceased, but I didn't know when his cremation was. So I texted my niece and I said, when is the cremation? And she said, it's over. It was actually today. So that was in the 26th of September, 2022. So the record that she gave me was Pergolesi's Stabat Mater. And the song I was thinking of was the Dolorosa.
Okay.
When I was walking.
Just before we listen to that, I'd hate to let you go without a poem. You do have a poem that you wrote for Bartley, don't you?
I do, yeah. He leaves the ironing board open. He likes crisp white shirts and Tracy Chapman. He leaves the ironing board open in his mobile home near the motorway so that he is halfway there if he ever makes the decision to go out. He plays Tracy Chapman really loud in his mobile home near the motorway so that he can't hear the noise of the cars or the screech of his loneliness crashing into him from every side.
Wow. I suppose you could, like, a successful poem, really, the word you'd use is devastating, isn't it? Like, a good poem can be devastating, can't it?
It can be. And it's an old poem. It wasn't one that I wrote since. You know, it's like it must be 30 years old. It was in, Salmon did it and Blodex did it in Throwing the Vowels. So it's an old poem, but
Rita Ann, it kicks like a mule. It really does.
That's what they're supposed to do, Brendan. They're supposed to kick you.
Rita Ann Higgins, thank you so much. And Rita, you're part of the lineup for the Court Festival of Literature in Galway. It runs from this Tuesday to the following Tuesday. And I think you're doing a reading on Sunday night.
With Suzanne Dickey, the brilliant and fantastic Elaine Feeney, and the wonderful Jackie Kay. Love them all.
Okay, Rita Ann Higgins, that was an absolute pleasure. Thank you so much.
Pleasure was mine, Brendan. Thank you.
And we leave it now with Stabat Mater, Dolorosa by Pergolesi. And this is sung by the soprano June Anderson.